Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com.
Tennessee sounds perfect.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Let's give it up for the super producer of this episode and our show, Mr. Max Williams.
What to the what?
Our personal Il Papa.
Yeah, they call him Il Papa. This is an interesting episode. You're Noel, I'm Ben. We're talking about something that has, I think, continually fascinated all three of us, especially our research associate, Jeff, micronations.
Right. Not to be confused with Micronesia, which is not a micronation.
No, that's just a nation of very tiny islands.
Tiny people?
Lilliputians? It's interesting because it's not that far away from the part of the world where real-life hobbits once existed.
Oh, the Shire.
Homo Florensis.
Ah, yes, of course.
Yeah. Guys, I have a question. Uh-huh. Let's try to do this off of memory. What micronations have we done this for? So I'll start off Andorra.
Andorra. San Marino.
Andorra's where they make all the mink coats. No, that's Angora. Sorry.
Angora's a kind of coat.
That's right.
Andorra's where you go to buy cigarettes and booze tax-free when you're in Spain.
It's the duty-free shop of the world.
And it's San Marino.
Uh-huh.
That was just seven hills.
Yeah, it's the dude who lived in the cave.
That's right. That's the cave, right. Guy. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to be really great at this game, y'all.
We're nailing it. We got it.
One more. We got Monaco.
Oh, Monaco. I don't even count Monaco. Yeah. It's like a set dressing for a James Bond film.
It really is.
It is indeed. And if I could use this as an opportunity for a personal plug, this podcast that I've been working on about the Rolling Stones' Exile on Main Street record, which they made in the south of France, which is very near Monaco, has a song on it called Tumbling Dice that is specifically a reference to all of the debauched gambling hijinks that take place in Monaco by the wealthy and powerful.
Now, lest we sound like we're disparaging any of these micronations, we just want to shout out any tourism board listening. We would love to go. We will go to Monaco. Max loves dice. Noel, I don't know if you and I are big gamblers.
I got dice in my pocket right now. Can you see the outline?
Check this out.
Whoa.
You think I'm playing?
How many sides you got?
I've got my Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, you can hear them. You can hear them.
Yeah, yeah.
Tippy tapping.
Let's see what we roll for now.
I can't.
Not bad. Not bad. Okay. We're just going to say all 20s.
Is that a skill check? Is that what you call that? Yeah. That's all I know. I obviously am not a D&D guy, though I have been very much enjoying the new Legend of Zelda game, Tears of the Kingdom, which has some very Shire-like locations in it.
I'm excited for Baldur's Gate 3.
Balderdash 3?
Baldur's Gate 3.
Ah, okay.
It's the... has nothing to do with today's episode, but tell us what you think. Vatican City, man. I've always wanted to go.
Well, Baldur's Gate is, I believe, centered around the infernal powers of the damned.
It's based on Dungeons & Dragons.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Evil stuff.
I've never played it. Our pal Matt said the controls on the other ones were a little clunky. But you know me, man. I can only play like one game at a time.
So. Yeah, it's like reading a book. Vatican City, though, is in fact a bastion of defense against the infernal powers of Baldur's Gate and Dungeons & Dragons.
What a segue, Noel. Yes, that's absolutely true. The Vatican has a distinct has a distinction that not a lot of other religions get, which is it is a country all its own. So there's Italy, you know, Rome, Florence, mm-hmm. et cetera, and then there's Vatican City, which is totally different. They have their own passports. Mm-hmm. They got all the stuff you would imagine a country should have.
And, like, there are regular civilians that live there somehow, right?
Interesting you say that, because obviously most of their population is Catholic clergy, but there are non-clergy members who live there, the Swiss Guards.
Okay, only the Swiss Guards. So no, like, janitorial staff. Like, those folks have to live outside of the city, and then I guess they commute in. Or do they have their own internal staff that are actually holy cleaners?
They have holy janitors.
Holy janitors.
Finally.
By the way, I think we've mentioned this before on the show, but the idea of the Holy See has always been very fascinating and elusive to me, because it's spelled S-E-E.
I think we talked about San Marino.
That's right. That's right.
I know, I like it, yeah.
Forgive me for being redundant, but that is a theme. I've always found that term to be very interesting, and I think we got to the bottom of it last time. But just as a refresher, What is the Holy See, and how does it figure into what Vatican City is?
The Holy See is, put simply, the jurisdiction of the Pope, because the Pope is also the Bishop of Rome. And the word, the etymology, is not as cool as I had hoped, honestly, because see comes from the Latin sedes, I want to say, S-E-D-E-S, which meant seat, or means seat. So basically, they're saying a holy seat, but it's fancy and confusing.
Cool. That makes perfect sense.
Right, yeah.
So Vatican City, as you mentioned, is in fact, was set up as the seat of the Catholic Church. And I guess is that the same as the Holy Roman Empire?
It is not the same.
It's not the same. Okay. Yeah. Forget I even said anything. Seat of the Catholic Church, the Catholic faith. And it was, in fact, initiated with the construction of what is called a basilica, which is, I guess, kind of a fancy mausoleum, or at the very least, it's like a fancy structure meant to house the bones of Saint Peter.
Yeah, yeah. Upon whom this rock was founded, right? The rock of the church, founding the church. So his grave, like you said, Noel's in Rome. The basilica is made in the 4th century CE or AD, whichever you prefer. The area became a really popular tourist site. Well, pilgrimage site, but you see what we're saying. And eventually it was abandoned for a time because the papal court had what we in production call a company move. Mm-hmm. They relocated to France in 1309.
Yeah, interesting choice. But then eventually in 1377, the church did return, and several other very important historical landmarks were constructed, including the Sistine Chapel. We know about that one. Very fancy ceiling there we'll get into. And the Apostolic Palace, as well as, don't call it a comeback, the new St. Peter's Basilica. Right. These were all constructed within the bounds of Vatican City. And in the current form, what we know Vatican City as today, being a sovereign nation, a micronation, actually was established in 1929.
Super recent.
Relatively recently, with the signing of something called the Lateran Pacts.
Mm, yes. Hopefully everybody listening is going, yes, the Pacts. Because I don't think either of us were aware of that at first. This is coming to us from a greathistory.com article, which is basically their dictionary entry on Vatican City.
Pretty cool, too. If you look at sort of this, I guess, the city square, mm-hmm. really more of a circle, kind of, it looks like, what do you call this thing? Parentheses, there's a giant sort of obelisk in the middle. And I guess, what is the building that is sort of the feature that sort of looks like the state capital, the capital of the United States with a dome?
That's the Costco.
Okay, cool. Yeah, they definitely styled on it. It's got a really, it's sort of like when you're in New York City and you see, a Citibank or a freaking, a CVS, and it looks like some kind of, like,
crazy old columned, you know,
for sure, Gothic architecture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's the Duane Reade.
It is, in fact, not the Costco.
It is not. They don't have room.
St. Peter's Dome, I believe, is what it's referred to as. St. Peter's Basilica, the feature that I'm describing is, in fact, St. Peter's Dome. But this is where, you know, the masses, these pilgrims that you're talking about, will come to, you know, see an appearance by the Pope, where he'll come out on some kind of little balcony and hold up his little two fingers, his little peace sign, and make some sort of holy declaration. And it's, you know, it absolutely gets jammed. You know, the image on history.com's article shows an absolutely packed house.
And if you go to travel guides like Rome Wise, shout out to Elisa Bernard and Alessandro Basagli, you can see some really cool stuff you can do in the city. I did not know this. You can climb the dome of St. Peter's Basilica.
Oh, awesome. If I wasn't afraid of heights, I would do that.
Well, what if we take a hot air balloon and you climb down a rope ladder?
Noel, are you in for this?
Absolutely.
Great.
You're supposed to be on my side when it comes to height stuff.
No, I'm okay. I'm relatively okay with height stuff. And you know I love a heist, so I'll be the bag man, and you can shimmy me up a rope or a pole.
Well, I'm the face, so I have to be somewhere else anyways.
How's your Italian?
Oh, perfect.
Oh, great. Cool. I'm persuaded by the way you answered in English. So don't feel bad. My Italian's terrible. I'm actually, as you guys know, I'm spending some time in Italy pretty soon.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I'm not going to be at the...
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
I'm not going to be at Vatican City.
Okay. Well, we can chat about this offline. But the founding of Rome around 800 BCE through the very end of what is known as the Roman Republic, 44 BCE, the name of the area that is now referred to as Vatican City was Ager Vaticanus, which is located on a hill on the west bank of the Tiber River.
Yeah, and if you go to Vatican City now, of course, for Catholics and non-Catholics alike, this is one of the world's most popular, most prestigious tourist destinations. It's simply the seat of so much history. It might surprise some of us to learn that this wasn't always the case. It was kind of a dull neighborhood for a while because it was close to another city, an Etruscan city named Veii. And it also had some geographical problems. The thing about rivers like the Tiber is they flood.
Right. You'd want to get flood insurance, or if that was a thing back then, someone would be trying to sell it to you. The Tiber River, as you said, the banks would overflow and those waters would flood the city. But after first century AD, Vaticanus became the term to describe this area. It referred to the area that today is the site of St. Peter's Square, which is what we described with all the you know, looky loos, and Vatican Hill. And also an area known as Via della Consolazione. I hope I did that relative justice.
We are not obviously native Italian speakers, folks. Thank you. We're doing our best. We mean no offense.
Quick question.
Yeah.
Do you have to show your Catholic credentials, your bona fides?
No.
To be allowed in?
It's not like Mecca.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, that's a thing in Mecca?
Mm-hmm. There are, you cannot enter, you're not supposed to enter Mecca if you are not of the Muslim faith.
Okay. So they relatively speaking welcome secular tourism.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Of course. I mean, think about all the reporters who come there from around the world all the time.
It's a very good point. But I'd imagine, you know, given it being the seat of the Catholic Church and so many Catholic officials of the highest order, security is probably pretty tight.
So tight. Yes. This is a, well, the best way to put it, and this is kind of an ugly thing, but we have to admit it, is that there are a lot of people who, for one reason or another, will attempt acts of violence against, you know, we can't forget that the Catholic Church, however imperfect it's been as a political entity, has a lot of ongoing problems. It also, people of the Catholic faith have been targeted before in the past, you know, so because the Pope is an historic world leader, there are assassination attempts. So you're making a great point about security. Again, this wasn't always the way. If it wasn't for this historical figure, Agrippina the Elder, then it may well have just stayed a marsh.
Yeah, it sank into the swamp.
Yeah.
Great big tracts of land.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
I'm sorry, I'm being a Monty Python nerd. Though that's true. Agrippina the Elder, which is a baller name, had this kind of, you know, swampy marshland drained and had it landscaped beautifully, you know, with gardens. And then her son, a fellow you might have heard of, a little guy by the name of Caligula.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Real stand-up fella. watch the movie. It's basically pornography.
Right.
It was, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, produced by the publisher of Penthouse magazine, or one of the highly X-rated, you know, sub-Playboy nudie mags of the time. I forget the guy's name, but there are serious acts portrayed in this film. Also portrayed in the film is Emperor Caligula, of course, played by Malcolm McDowell. It's very interesting film. It is an artifact of the time. There's really nothing else quite like it.
Right.
It's got some really elaborate death scenes involving like weird contraptions. Like there's a part where people are buried up to their necks in the ground, and then this like weird lawnmower buzzsaw thing just chops all their heads and off.
There are multiple versions of that film because it was so controversial. Yeah, Bob Guccione, mm-hmm. right?
I think that's right. But Caligula wanted to make this a site for kind of chariot competitions in the garden. So he actually built what's called a circus, like Circus Maximus, right? Like that kind of, which is really more just like a hippodrome kind of situation.
Yeah, it's like a public venue for performance, right? And so this work results in the obelisk that we mentioned earlier. The obelisk in St. Peter's Square was taken by Caligula from Egypt just to flex, to decorate the circus. And eventually Nero completes this huge public work.
Another great fellow.
Oh, yeah. Class act. That
great
guy.
Violinist, too, as it turns out. Or at least that, maybe that's just the myth.
When motivated.
Correct. As long as stuff was burning.
I still think we should do an episode on the crazy eccentricities of Roman emperors and how much of that is fact and how much is fiction.
We did one a ways back. Remember the little nippers?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
the
yeah.
The little nipping minnows?
They made those kids swim and
nibble
nip
at
him.
Their toes?
Oh, boy.
Which one was that? Anyway, we'll
get back to it. But the point is, this has a lot of history, even in its formation. That obelisk is from Egypt. Nero, again, being a super class act, doesn't have the idea originally. He completes the work, and people start calling it the Circus of Nero. This becomes a martyrdom site for a lot of Christians, including Saint Peter.
And, that's right.
And they're very upfront about the history in that regard, to their credit. Like, you can get We're getting some of this information from the tourism site for the Vatican.
Very similar to what you'll see if you go to Berlin or other like German kind of museum cities. You know, there are lots of references to the Holocaust, and they're very open about, you know, how many very, very bad people donated some very, very important works of art, and wings of museums and areas of cities were named after, you know, bona fide anti-Semites, you know,
oh, who were
high ups in the Nazi party. So I think it's always interesting when a problematic culture does their very best to own up to their problematic past.
Absolutely.
Doesn't wipe the slate clean, but it's a start.
Can I tell you something crazy? Before we move on, I had an interesting conversation. I saw an interesting conversation with some folks on Twitter or X, whatever, right? Folks who are an audio podcast, so you should have seen the head shakes we all made. But anyway, on that platform, someone showed me that in reaction to the Oppenheimer film in Japan, several Japanese meme posters were trying to make, offensive jokes 9/11. About 9/11. And they didn't realize Americans would go, well, is it a funny joke?
That's the memes that Americans love, you know? Right. I mean, we're already probably well ahead of them in that particular game, you know? It's been done. But I mentioned Nero fiddling while Rome was burning,
right,
at least I alluded to that.
Yeah.
That is an image that is often conjured, you know, in referring to this individual, because it is said, or at least it is believed by many, that he himself started a massive fire in 64 CE that destroyed more than two-thirds of the city and then blamed it on the Christians.
And his secret, his conspiracy, according again to the story, is that he did this so he could first get rid of these pesky political activists, which is what Christians were becoming in his mind, these dissidents. And then secondly, so he could rebuild the city in his image. He wanted to construct something he called the Domus Aurea, or Golden House. And like you say, persecutes Christians as scapegoats. Again, according to the legend, he is said to have ordered the murder of Saint Peter. And it's true that after Rome was leveled in this fire, AD 64, however it started, Nero executed St. Peter along with many other members of the Christian faith.
But as we know, you can't really kill an idea. And oftentimes when you kill someone that represents the heart of an idea, you just serve to further bolster that idea. It's sort of like the Streisand effect we talk about often. The idea of the moment you start to try to wipe something off the internet, that's when the internet really starts to dig in and like push that stuff out even more.
100%. Yeah, they rise again, stronger. So something interesting happens on the way to the present day. Emperor Constantine I converts to Christianity, and this is evidenced by the Edict of Milan in 313 AD, or again, CE. And so he starts, he's the one who makes the basilica. Like, after all these Christians get executed, including St. Peter, there's a necropolis at the base of Vatican Hill. And Constantine is the one who orders the construction of the basilica over the tomb in 324. Very old architecture.
Yeah, it's true. And it's always so interesting, man. Constantine is such an important figure in all of this because, I mean, again, Romans were virulently anti-Christian, as we've discussed. And then all of a sudden, there's a sea change. Not a holy sea change, just a regular sea change, spelled, I believe, S-E-A in this case. But that's all thanks to Constantine. And then all of a sudden, he's like flipping everybody left and right, you know, by edict to Christianity. And that is what leads, more or less, to this area becoming this sort of sanctified seat of the Catholic faith. All based around the supposed site of St. Peter's burial.
Ding, ding, ding. Supposed, believed.
That's right.
Site, yeah. The palace, conversely, is constructed in the 5th century during the papacy of Pope Symmachus.
I'm sorry. I just picture like him walking around slapping people in the face.
I know, it's saying his name.
Yeah.
Symmachus.
Symmachus was here. And between 318 and 322, the very first church, St. Old Peter's Basilica, started in earnest. Again, this became a site for Christian pilgrims, then became sort of a housing situation for high-level clergymen.
And also, eventually, they built a marketplace that was kind of a really bustling site of trade, you know, for the region,
for sure.
Known as the District of Borgo.
Yeah. And, you know, when you get a lot of tourists, sometimes you get crime.
Mm-hmm.
So pirates attacked and damaged St. Peter's in 846. This caused Pope Leo IV to say, build a wall. We got to build a wall to keep the pirates out. We want to protect our holy structures. And this was, you know, at the time, this was a pretty good and smart defensive measure.
Indeed. And Ben, I just want to make a quick little behind the curtain thing. I sometimes listen to research that we've done or that our research associates extraordinaires have done for these shows on a voice to speech app.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
just
yeah,
a
yeah.
way that Speechify. I can kind of do it in the car. Speechify. And we did one recently on, I forget exactly which episode it was, but there was some reference to pornography in it. And Triple X, the speech to voice robot, reads that as 30. Every time, because that's the Roman numeral, triple X.
That would be the sax, no, not the saxophone. Which one is that one? That's the hip hop episode.
That's right. Yeah. Triple X, the idea of you know, censorship and all of that, and the X rating, and then triple X rating, the fact that it wasn't actually really a thing.
Oh, no, no. Just, pornography studios created that to make it look like they were even worse.
So hardcore.
Yeah.
Yeah. But sorry, I just had to do a little aside on
warning,
Roman
this
numerals.
Film is rated 30.
Rated 30. Exactly.
All right. Well, let's like, you know, again, say yelling that you want to build a wall kind of has a bad connotation for a lot of us here in 2023. But back then, Pope Leo, he had his head in the right place. They did build the wall. 39 feet tall. So they're not playing around. This is not like a decorative picket fence. And when this enclosed the whole area, when the wall was complete, they called it Leonine City. Get it? Pope Leo. It's a cavalcade of humble dudes
always
naming things after themselves.
Yeah, no, it's true. And that was wrapped up in around 1852. And yeah, it really was designed to, you know, keep the folks inside in and the folks outside out.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Like a wall is meant to do. I'm sorry, I'm stating the obvious here.
Right. There is a small shrine that, according to believers, holds the bones of the real St. Peter, and they top it with a canopy that has four twisted columns from the second century. I imagine we're not architecture experts, so I imagine it's like taking a column and just twisting your hands in opposite directions.
I think that's right. Yeah. In that description, there's not an image, but that description, I haven't been to Vatican City, so I haven't seen a lot of this stuff personally, but that description comes from an article by Elisa Bernard from RomeWise.com, your guide to Rome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
Rome again, if you want to.
There we go. Rome around the world. And Rome and the Vatican did indeed spread around the world. Okay, some other things you need to know. People started donating lands to the Catholic Church. It eventually becomes one of the largest landholders in all of Europe. And with that power, you know, like little Kim said, money, power, respect. You get the money, you get the power, and then people respect you. I'm sure she's referencing the growth of Vatican City in those lyrics. Big day, December 25th, 800 CE. A guy that may also be familiar to you, Charlemagne, not our coworker.
Mm-hmm. The god, not the god. This is just
regular
Charlemagne.
Charlemagne.
Yeah, he probably thought of himself as a bit of a god, I would imagine.
Right. Especially on this day when he was officially crowned Holy Roman Emperor by Pope Leo III. This took place on this big, big circular stone. And you can see the stone right at the entrance of St. Peter's Basilica. When you visit today, you are walking through history when you are in this town.
Incredible. That's the beautiful thing about so many parts of Europe is like, it's a park, but there are like sculptures and topiaries and things that have been maintained for hundreds of years.
You're in a bar and you look around and you go, hey, how old is this bar? And they're like, well, it's 1500s.
Is that the Shroud of Turin over there?
Yeah,
as a bar wipe down cloth?
Yeah, don't bring it up. Don't bring it up. But yeah, what's that old saying? I'm sure a lot of our ridiculous historians are thinking this already. In Europe, 200 miles is a long way. in the United States, 200 years is a long time.
That's very true. So, as you said, Charlemagne is crowned on the eve of December 25th, 800 CE, crowned Holy Roman Emperor by Pope Leo III. And eventually, the popes start to have a very similar type and amount of power as an emperor might.
Yeah. Yeah. They start governing neighboring regions. They become the state authority. And up until about the mid 1800s, they ruled a large piece of the Italian peninsula. And these areas came to be collectively referred to as the Papal States. These popes would live at the Lateran Palace, and then later they would live at the Quirinal Palace.
Quirinal. Or if you're British, urinal. So
right. Quirinal. Aluminium and so on.
And that's between 1309 and 1377 when the papal residence was actually in France, as we referred to earlier, in Avignon.
Avignon. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, sir. And their dalliance, their company moved to France, didn't last too long, actually, in the great scheme of things. The church returned to Italy in 1377. And this is where they begin building things like the Sistine Chapel, the new St. Peter's Basilica, and
The old Apostolic Palace was actually leveled, and then they built a new one for the Pope to live in. That's Pope Nicholas V. This was kind of the beginning of the new and improved Vatican City that is largely what we know today.
Yeah, yeah. And it happens because our pal Pope Nicholas V decides to live permanently within the bounds of the city. And fast forward toward the end of the 1400s, Pope Julius II is saying, it's time to think of the future. It's time to preserve our legacy. The basilica is 1,200 years old now. We should probably look into some maintenance. And sadly, this idea came a little too late. Imagine a huge building like this. It's leaning to one side. It's not big enough to hold the huge tomb that Pope Julius II had asked Michelangelo to design for him.
That's right. Always stay humble. And this was a big deal because all of this stuff, you know, the whole origin of this area was connected directly to St. Peter's martyrdom, you know, under the Romans. And so it was kind of very unpopular, at the very least divisive, to consider overhauling it, you know, or it would almost be like bordering on sacrilege, you know, to the faithful.
Yeah, absolutely. But they had to deal with reality. It would be virtually impossible to repair this structure. So they said, we're going to preserve St. Peter's tomb, and we're going to make something even bigger, bolder, better, and more holy around it. Pope Julius passes away in 1513, and subsequent popes after him consult so many architects to try to figure out what this new basilica will look like. How will it not be sacrilegious? How will it be more of the stuff you liked already, but even better? And how will it be an appropriately dignified structure for one of the most important figures in all of Catholic history?
So I know we're jumping around in history a little bit, as we are wont to do, but mm-hmm. let's jump, if we may, to May the 6th of 1527, when troops acting under orders from Charles V, the Holy Roman Emperor at the time, rose up. Because they hadn't been getting paid.
Good reason to rise up.
It is. Yeah, for sure. Labor rights, very important concept. So a lot of these foreign soldiers, they didn't just attack Rome, or as the popular militaristic term would be of the time, sack Rome. Mm-hmm. But in fact, they pretty much annihilated it.
They did a Nero.
Yeah, they Neroed the heck out of it. And it was absolutely brutal. Rape and pillage style kind of behavior. And 189 Swiss guards in the palace total. Of that number, 147 actually died right there in front of St. Peter's Basilica. These Swiss guards, by the way, as you mentioned at the top of the show, also housed in this part. Why are they called Swiss Guards? That's always confused me.
I'm so glad you asked. Okay, so they are kind of a relatively new force at this time, because it was, say, 1527. Mm-hmm. So they've been around for a few decades. They start in the 1400s, in late 1400s, because Pope Sixtus the Fourth, which is confusing.
Wow. The sixth, perhaps.
Can't be Pope 64. Pope Sixtus the Fourth made an alliance with what was called the Swiss Confederacy. And he did this because he thought, we need, you know, we're a state force now. We need an army, because the true definition of any state is a monopoly on violence. And so he makes a pact and says, we're going to agree with you, the Swiss Confederacy, a bunch of really small independent states, initially within the Holy Roman Empire. We're going to get your soldiers. They're going to work for us. They don't have to become members of the clergy or anything like that. So the Swiss Guard, which is around today, has its own storied history that would be a lot of fun to talk about. They went through the fire. Like you said, almost 150 died. The Pope Clement VII, in this attack, he has to go to ground. He's on the run.
That's right. And he, along with, I think, only around 42 of these Swiss Guard members, escape through a network of passageways on top of that Leonine Wall that we mentioned, which is the wall surrounding Vatican City. And that led to a fortress called Castel Sant'Angelo. And eventually Pope Clement VII, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Actually had to pay a quite sizable ransom and give up some of those papal states, or control of them, to the Holy Roman Empire. So this really does get a little convoluted, because I even was confused at the top. I'm like, wait, is Holy Roman Empire the same as like the seat of the Catholic Church? And it's not, because there was a time where they were like at odds with each other.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because the power that Vatican City held largely was due to the fact that they were gifted all of this land and all of this property, and they were just early to the game. So they eventually amassed enough influence and, you know, cachet, I guess, you know, actual physical goods and lands, that they were a rival to the emperor. And
right,
that probably didn't go over particularly well.
Yeah. And even the term Holy Roman Empire wasn't used until the 13th century, I want to say. And the idea was supposed to be that they got their authority from God, right? So the Pope would have to co-sign you as a monarch, which led to some very sticky situations. Anyway, as you said, Pope Clement VII, in the parlance of our times, he got God.
He sure did.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
So in 1870, the various states that were contained within the peninsula of Italy, the Italian peninsula, became kind of unified, I guess, under King Victor Emmanuel II. This was also a time where the Pope's supremacy was beginning to wane a little bit because he'd already, the position, had to give up a lot of that control over these papal states and of the influence they had. Mm-hmm. So it was a little bit questionable between 1861 and 1929 as to what the Pope even represented, you know, and what kind of power that position would wield.
Right. Yeah. And Italy, you're probably wondering the whole time, what was Italy doing? They were minding their own business. Italy was not unified. They were a bunch of semi-autonomous different communities and states. And Italy would not interfere with the Holy See within the Vatican, but outside of the Vatican, they would confiscate stuff pretty much whenever they can, including the Quirinal Palace, which was, once again, formerly the Pope's official home.
That's right. And at that point, the popes start to, you know, kind of hole up within the walls of Vatican City, largely, I would argue, for their own protection.
100%.
Yeah. And a lot of the, I guess, let's call them priorities of the popes were then recognized by something called the Law of Guarantees, which included things like the right to send and receive ambassadors and to maintain these ambassadorships. But also the popes didn't recognize the supremacy of the kings of Italy and their right to rule Rome. They refused to get out of their hidey hole behind those walls in Vatican City. So it really did become kind of like a bunker, like a compound,
yeah,
you know, where they were able to kind of seek refuge, you know, and be quite isolated.
100%, right? Again, for their own safety, but they became prisoners, essentially, out of necessity. Let's fast forward. Max, if we get the... Yeah, there we go. So, perfect. We're in 1926. This is where Vatican City begins to transform into an actual facts nation state, as our pal Vogelbaum would say. The negotiations for the settlement of what became known as the Roman question started in 1926. The government of Italy and the Holy See, again, the jurisdiction of the Pope, they create these things we mentioned earlier, the Lateran Pacts. This agreement gets signed off by one of the only bad Bens in history, Benito Mussolini, prime minister at the time, on behalf of King Victor Emmanuel III of Italy. And then for the Vatican side, the pacts are signed by Cardinal Secretary of State Pietro Gasparri for Pope Pius XI. This all goes down on February 11th of 1929. So it took 3 years for them to negotiate this stuff. And it's a big win for Vatican City.
Mm-hmm. It's officially ratified on June 7th of 1929. Again, much more recent history than we would typically think. You know, you think of something like Vatican City, obviously the history of it as a place much longer. But I think, you know, for me at least, I've always thought of it as its own kind of, you know, sovereign nation.
Right, right. It seems strange how close the history is here. I think a lot of us in the West, especially if we are not of the Catholic faith, we assume that since ancient times, Vatican City has been a distinct nation state.
Yeah. And, you know, fascists don't typically have a reputation for, like, you know, being particularly agreeable,
right,
or giving stuff up.
Sure.
But the fascist Italian government does, in fact, agree to the Lateran Treaty, to the terms of the Lateran Treaty. And the Pope then is able to exercise sovereignty after he is elected as the head of the Roman Catholic Church. He becomes an absolute monarch, essentially, or let's call it, I guess, you know, Britannica.com uses the term executive in terms of his head of this mini government, which has an executive, legislative, and judicial branch, the Pope being the head of all of those.
Right. Big man on campus. So one of my questions is, and I say this with great, great respect, one of my questions is, how absolute is that in practice? Does that mean the Pope can be walking by somewhere and point at somebody and say, I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Get it out. Or like he can he I'm sure he can. He's like a, he could be like a stand-up comic when they're doing a show. He could just walk by and not like someone and say,
get him out.
Get him out of here. Now get Swiss. They need the Swiss on him.
Yeah, get the Swiss. And it's funny, too, because we, well, I've always thought of the Swiss as being, you know, a gentle, neutral, milk chocolate-loving people.
Right.
But we, as we know, the history of, like, the Swiss guard and Swiss soldiers, very intense and brutal, you know,
and
really good at, like, living rough and, you know, oftentimes, you know, dealing with very difficult climates and, you know, kind of...
inventing great knives.
100%.
Yeah. They also, they play a huge role. I'm more and more convinced we need to do an episode on the Swiss Guard. So another thing that fascist Italy does, which it may surprise us given what we know about fascism, they modernize a lot of the Vatican. They give them a train station, telephone and telegraph office, a post office, a radio station. They supply them with money and property in other parts of Rome to kind of compensate in their negotiations. And weirdly enough, despite all this, during World War II, the Vatican officially stays neutral.
And both the Allied and Axis forces exercise some restraint. And you have to argue, I think, that reverence for religion, you know, and the sanctity of Vatican City plays into that much more than any kind of strategic planning.
Yeah, no army in the Western world wants to be the people responsible for bombing the Pope. That's a hard one to walk back.
Yeah, that's a straight ticket to HE double hockey sticks right there.
It probably is. I think it's just implied. They're so reverent about this. This neutrality is taken so seriously that when the British Air Force drops pamphlets over Rome and some of them land in the bounds of the Vatican, the pontiff gets super angry. And even when the U.S. enters the war, they oppose bombing Rome and they exempt Catholic pilots and crew from any air raids on Rome or other property held by the church unless they actively, assertively said, as a Catholic, I'm cool with it.
It just speaks to the power of faith, you know, and how it can transcend and how the, you know, just again, the Roman Catholic Church has such a foothold in Europe, you know, and, you know, throughout the world in many ways, but especially in Europe, that even if you were like a member of like the Church of England or something like that, you still respected the papacy, you know, it was something that you would dare not interfere with.
Mm-hmm. And during the war, by the way, Pius XII didn't create any new cardinals, so they had a backlog. They had positions to fill. In 1946, he creates 32 cardinals to fill all these vacant openings. The Pontifical Military Corps, except for the Swiss Guard, gets disbanded in 1970. The Gendarmerie?
Sounds right.
Yeah? Okay. They become civilian police.
I'm going to say Gendarmerie.
Yeah. Okay. And 1984... again, very recent, the Holy See and Italy modify parts of their earlier treaty, but the sovereignty sticks. And that is why you can visit the Vatican today and you will be visiting a sovereign foreign country. We didn't even talk about the size of the Vatican yet.
Yeah, what are we talking here, Ben? It's, again, we're talking about micronations, so it's got to be small. Sort of part of the criteria of this whole ongoing series, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. It's, get this, 0.19 square miles.
Wow. Only around 109 acres within, yeah, exactly, a roughly 2 mile, square mile border, 160 acres of holdings, land holdings elsewhere. But most importantly, it represents the spiritual home, if not physical, to roughly 1.2 billion Catholics around the world. Mm-hmm. 1.2 billion.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess what we should point that out too. Quick correction. It covers 109 acres. You will see the estimates say that it's 0.19 square miles, but it's got a 2 mile border.
Oh, excuse me. Correct. Right, I was thinking 1.9. Yeah,
they're two different.
No, yeah, they're two different things. And yeah, only around 1,000 people actually live there. Remains an absolute monarchy, essentially. You know, we talked about
out of here.
Being
Get the Swiss.
An executive, you know, someone in control of both the executive, judicial, and legislative branches of government. That's an absolute monarchy. And an incredibly, you know, potent historical site and continued site for pilgrimages from people from around the world that want to come and hang with the Pope and, you know, see. What's the thing, too? When they elect a new Pope, the white smoke?
Yes. Yeah. The conclave.
Yeah, that's the one.
It's
kind of like a king's moot, you know, situation.
It very much is. Yeah.
It is.
And the negotiations are fraught with political intrigue within the Vatican, stuff that we, not even non-Catholics, but non-clergy members wouldn't understand the intrigue.
And I think we did an episode on stuff they don't want you to know about secret museums.
Yes.
And this idea that there is some sort of secret cache of artifacts housed within the Vatican that you don't get to see.
No,
or know about.
No.
And by you, I mean all of you.
Yeah.
You know, the royal you.
Unless the cardinals and the Pope are listening now, but I assume you guys are busy.
Because think about the history, man. I mean, like all of that time when Vatican City started to really be on the rise because of all of these faithful people of great power and influence just giving them stuff, you know, gifting them lands. All that stuff like exists somewhere. There.
Yeah, it has to go somewhere. Things don't simply cease to be. It is still continually fascinating. This is the world's smallest state. It's nuts how much younger it is than a lot of people assume. And I would love to visit. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think?
Smallest states, largest church.
Yeah,
it's almost like the whole, I mean, think about it. The whole city was built around a church.
Yeah.
So it totally makes sense. Not to mention that it is this like spiritual, you know, seat for this, you know, over a billion people. It's pretty fascinating.
We got to ask Max. So Noel, you're in. Max, would you go with us to the Vatican if it meant if you didn't have to climb the dome?
No shimmying.
Get in a balloon.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. The Vatican is just, you know, I don't know. It's the Vatican. It's like one of the most famous places on the earth. Also in agreement, I thought this place was much older as a country than it actually is. But yeah, I mean, this is like serious history.
It's just something that we have grown up knowing. And right. I think, you know, sometimes individuals feeling like the main character in their own story, we just kind of assume that the things that we've always known have always been true since forever. That's sort of the point of history, studying history. And hopefully this podcast is to help sort of correct some of those misconceptions as best we can.
Yeah. And we also didn't even talk about the fact that Vatican City has restaurants.
Oh, I'm sure they're delightful.
Yeah, I just didn't eat lunch yet, so
yeah,
that's why.
Me neither. I'm sure you could get a really nice cacio e pepe.
Yeah, there we go.
Are they, like, good restaurants, or are they, like, really cheesy tourist trap restaurants?
Oh, there have to be some good ones. I'm sure there's some
And there
ones.
Have to be some tourist trap ones.
100%. They probably have a food court in St. Peter's Basilica, I imagine.
I'm thinking of, like, one of those really themed up, like, gift shop inside the restaurant, because you know when we go, guys, we gotta go 50-50 on that. Like we have to do the most touristy one,
oh,
and then
percent.
Also the most legit one.
Yeah, I also put forth that we pool our resources and start a restaurant in Vatican City called Body of Christ.
And what
we, and we only
wrong?
Serve bread. We only serve bread
and wine.
Yeah, for dipping.
I'm certain this is one of the best ideas we've ever had. And the Pope is going to love it.
He's going to love it.
He's going to be like, you know, all we have to do.
He'll come to the ribbon cutting.
It's an absolute monarchy, which means all we have to do is get one guy on our side.
One guy.
If we can convince him, if we can pitch the Pope on Body of Christ, the pop-up restaurant, or permanent.
Pope-up restaurant.
Isn't this Pope, like, really cool, though? Isn't he, like, really, like, way more progressive than the last couple ones?
Bro, we're about to see.
Yeah.
All right.
Holy see.
Holy see. You're killing it today, man.
We're done.
So thank you, of course, to our research associate, Jeff Bartlett. Thank you, of course, to the one and only Mr. Max Williams. Who else?
Oh, Jonathan Strickland, of course. Long may he reign as Pope of our hearts.
The Nero of our podcast.
Indeed, that's fair. Yeah, I was trying to be nice this time, but you took it to the right place, Ben. I like where your head's at. I like the cut of your jib. Alex Williams, who composed our theme. Christopher Asiotis, here in spirit. And you, Ben, the Pope of my heart.
And also with you.
Thank you. Go in peace. We'll see you next time, folks.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.